You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of November 20th, 2013. Strap yourself in and let's go. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I am here with two of my favorite punk news people. Well, one of them is one of my favorite punk news people. The other one I despise. We'll see if you can guess which is which. Firstly, here with me is news editor Brittany Strummer. Brittany Strummer, how is you?
I'm great.
I heard recently you decided to go to Masked Intruder. Are you excited to see Masked Intruder?
I'm very excited to see them. I hope I can sing heart-shaped guitar with them again.
Is that your favorite modern band, newer band, Masked Intruder?
I guess so. Because I would say probably Against Me or Dillinger 4 or Lawrence Arms, but
those bands are like 15 years old, Brittany.
Yeah,
those
so bands I guess are as old as you modern, are.
Brittany,
yeah, it's still modern.
Brittany. If it was 1967 and Masked Intruder was around, would you follow them around the states like the Grateful Dead? People would follow the Grateful Dead. Would you do that with Masked Intruder?
I mean, if I could, yeah. Like the end of Freaks and Geeks?
Yes, like the ends of Freaks and Geeks, precisely. Brittany, yeah, who was your favorite character on Freaks and Geeks?
Haverchuck, duh.
Yes, Haverchuck is best. Don't you? I love that episode, where his mom's going out with Coach Fredericks, and he's eating grilled cheese by himself and watching Bonanza or something. That's my favorite episode.
I like when he gets mad at the coach because he doesn't like Bill Murray.
Classic Haverchuck. And also with us, who you could say is a modern take on Haverchuck, is managing editor Adam White. Adam, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I can't complain. You alluded that you hate one of us. I guess that's me, so fuck you, John.
Well, why do you think it's you, Adam, per se?
Well, I mean, you can't hate Brittany.
Why couldn't I?
Well, I suppose, but you'd be wrong.
Well, or I could have been bluffing it. And honestly, I'll just come out and say, I love you both. I love everybody on Punk News, except Joe Pallone. But you two, I love especially. So thank you for being on the Punk News podcast with me tonight. Adam, last question before we get started. Do you like Freaks and Geeks? Have you seen the show?
I'm going to say no, but I know that my wife watched the whole thing on Netflix a little while ago. I want to say within the last 6 months, and I kept wandering into the room and going, oh, hey, it's that guy. And look, he's young. But that's the extent of my experience with it. But I understand it's beloved and I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Adam, you should
There's
watch
actually
it,
like a really cool pop punk band called the Haverchucks.
Sweet. Thanks for that factoid. Great. Adam, you should watch that show. It's a great, great show. It really is. Adam, did you watch the Wonder Years back in the day?
No.
You didn't?
No.
You didn't?
No, I didn't.
I thought everybody watched the Wonder Years back in the day. Adam, we're the same age.
Well, I don't know. I'm just in the counterculture here, not in your mainstream Wonder Years watching White Bread Eat World, John.
The Freaks and Geeks are the Wonder Years, but good. About 3 years ago, I rewatched an episode of the Wonder Years. I remember it being really funny, but it's not. Every episode of the Wonder Years is about how everybody in Kevin Arnold's family is depressed and everybody's doomed. It's a horrible, horrible show. It's the most pessimistic show that I've ever seen.
That I did watch it. Although, is there not some band called that now? All the TV shows from when we were kids are now pop punk or emo bands.
I guess, man. But no wonder there's so many bland bands out there. They're all basing themselves off Kevin Arnold. Let Winnie Cooper go. Let her go. That's what I have to say. Let's get this podcast started. And before we get started, I'm actually going to ramble on about two things. The first thing, I'm just going to get up on my pulpit, and you two can knock me down if you want. Second, I'm very interested in Adam White's opinion. First, this past weekend, I got a chance to see Kanye for various reasons. I got to say, it was one of the most amazing big budget shows I've ever seen. I'm not a huge fan of Kanye's music, and I think maybe he's not that great of a lyricist, but his show is amazing. There's a gigantic mountain out there. Basically the whole thing is a metaphor for about him losing his mother and his connection to his personal beliefs. It's like it's called the Yeezus Tour, and everyone thought that he was going to be like I'm bigger than Jesus, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's got like 12 girls that are supposed to be like Vestal Virgins. They like carry him onto the stage, and there's a gigantic mountain that explodes, and it like snows on him and stuff, and there's a monster that like glares at him that like represents guilt. I gotta say, props to Kanye for taking, well, actually when I was watching it, I'm like, oh my god, this is the most amazing live show I've ever seen. This is going to change everything. But then I remembered Alice Cooper, David Bowie, Iron Maiden, Gwar, all that stuff. So it's basically that in a hip-hop form. But it was so neat to see like a hip-hop guy really stretching the hip-hop live performance. So, I mean, are either you guys Kanye fans?
Not in particular, but tell me, okay, so not having really seen the show and going strictly on your description of it there, how is that not pretentious as shit?
Well, I mean, it's pretentious as any art that's pretentious. Like, I mean, like, if you viewed it as just a musical show, maybe it's pretentious. But if you accept that it's a play, like The Lion King, that, I mean, The Lion King's not pretentious. The play, that is, right?
I like sure. it.
Right, so I mean, it's like people, it's like people singing with giant statues, like giant puppets and stuff. Well, that's what Kanye did. I thought it was super clever, and I give him props for trying, despite it maybe being a little cheesy or a little weird or a little pretentious. But at least he's trying something different. I gotta say, I think pretentious is when you create something that really isn't that interesting, but act like it's interesting just because of the virtue of who you are. Whereas Kanye, if anything, I think it was not pretentious because maybe it was a little too obvious as to what he was getting at.
You see, I'm looking at this through the lens of rock and roll, and that if I saw, you know, some band where it was like, you know, guitar, bass, drummer, vocalist, and they did all that, you know, all that stage show around, you know, playing four chord rock songs, my impression would be that, wow, this band is really up their ass. Punk rock was created to destroy this.
But I mean, so, which
is why, like, I don't want to necessarily judge it by that because, like, it's not that. But I'm just like, through the rock and roll lens, I would be like,
But do you think Alice Cooper's pretentious? Because Alice Cooper is really the guy that invented, like, the huge rock and roll stage show.
Yeah, but like Alice Cooper does it with like a certain amount of tongue in cheek and goofiness to it, which I think like allows you to do that. Like you're conscious of it, so that's cool. It's not like, you know, insert stereotypical prog band of the moment kind of thing. So I don't know. I'm just I really have no basis for this argument. It's just my gut reaction to that sort of description.
Well, I can see that. But regardless, I think the lesson to be taken from this is I see a lot of punk rock bands feel as though they have to conduct their live show in a certain way. They have to wear certain clothes. They have to address the audience. They sort of have to act like it's not even the show's not that big of a deal. My advice to the bands is don't let other bands define how you want to present yourself in a live setting. If you want to rock the hell out, a lot of my favorite bands, then you should do it, and you shouldn't feel bound to like the lo-fi or low-production punk rock show.
Kanye has puppets.
Yes, and it was cool. Honestly, it was really cool. Like, I really enjoyed. I didn't even really like the music a whole much, but like as a play, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Huh.
So speaking of pretentious people, Adam, I really want your feedback on this. Rob Ford, what's happening with this? I mean, really, my mind is blown about this Rob Ford thing.
Who's that?
Rob Ford.
From
Toronto.
Oh, Toronto. Sorry. Everyone in the rest of Canada pretends Toronto doesn't exist.
I mean, I give Rob Ford style points, not moral points, but style points. Because when he's backed into a corner, he just keeps fighting back. See, like, so many politicians will be like, I messed up. I apologize on behalf of my constituents. And then, you know, they quit politics or whatever. But Rob Ford is just, like, punching back. He's like, I never smoked crack. And then when they got him on video, he's like, all right, well, I smoke crack, but I'm still not quitting. And like, you sexually harassed this girl. I was like, no, I did sexually harass this girl. I bang my wife all the time. It's great. I'm loving it.
So, okay. So, all right. So my actual opinion on this, and I think this is probably, I don't like to say that I speak for all like 34 million Canadians or whatever we are, but I do. So I am. The problem with this whole situation, the problem with him, has really nothing to do with, at least in my mind, nothing to do with him being like a giant boorish lout or him being, you know, on crack or whatever. The problem with this whole thing is just hubris. And I think that's what really gets to a lot of people up here. Because I think that if it really came down to it, push comes to shove, you know, yeah, it probably shows pretty poor judgment that you were like in a crack house smoking crack with known criminals, some of whom ended up dead not soon after that in various gang violence, when you're the mayor of like a major city. Yeah, that's pretty poor judgment. But I think if really push comes to shove, people could forgive the dude for, you know, getting super drunk. That's sort of part of his whole mantra of being like a big fat maniac. And, you know, people could even forgive the, you know, the drug usage, because I think up here people, when really push comes to shove, are probably pretty liberal about that. Like,
crack?
You know, as long, yeah, well, you know what? It's one of those things where like, this is me speaking, not the rest of Canada, by the way, but like, you know what? Whatever you do, so long as you can function the rest of your life, whatever, go drink paint. I don't care. Right. But when you do one of these things, and you shouldn't do one of these things because of your station. So let's say you're the mayor of Toronto, and you probably shouldn't smoke crack with known, you know, criminals when you're trying to advance a certain law and order agenda and be the guy that like makes decisions on police budgets and stuff like that. You probably shouldn't do that. So when you are caught, fine, you've been caught. The graceful thing to do, the non-hubristic thing to do, would be to at that point go, I fucked up, and fall on your sword. And then people would be, you know, there's a surprising amount of sympathy for this guy regardless of all this stuff. And I'll get to that in a sec. But he would have more of a chance of recovering and turning this around at that point. But because of the hubris, because he's just decided like, you know what? I wasn't caught. Fuck you. And then he starts to try to like change the narrative on it. I think that's what's really driving people crazy. Like, you see him in interviews or anything recently. His story has increasingly became, oh, well, you know, I didn't deny that I smoked crack. People were asking me, am I a crack addict? And that's no. So they didn't ask me the right question. And it all sorts of stupid bullshit like that. Like right now, him and his giant enabler load of a brother are out there on news stations right now saying, oh, I have medical experts helping me with my problem. Like what the fuck does that mean? And then anytime they push him on it, he's like, well, it's personal. It doesn't matter. Medical experts. Like, it doesn't mean anything. He could have like a, you know, he could have someone like, you know, casting like a voodoo spell in the background or something. Like, there's no actual proof of it that he's actually getting help, but because he's just coming at it with this like, look, it doesn't matter, it's personal thing, I think that's what people are really getting crazy about, is just like just the hubris in it.
Will there be a special election?
No, I mean, this has been the big question up here, and this is probably the kind of stuff that you guys don't hear so much about in the States, because it's more the kind of the political end of it here. So what's happened is that the city council in Toronto has basically – so Toronto's a big city. There's more people in Toronto. It's almost like a little province in itself, let's use American terms here. It's like a little state in and of itself within Ontario. It's entirely unlike the rest of Ontario due to its population, how many people are there. Compare like, you know, upstate Western New York to New York City. Like they're in the same state, but they're two totally different places, even culturally. That's sort of like Toronto and even the rest of Ontario. So Toronto, because it's so big, their mayoral office and all that has some additional powers and stuff like that a traditional mayor in a small Canadian town wouldn't have. Well, the council has sort of moved to strip him of all of his budget and all of his powers and all of that stuff. So the city council has basically just made him right now like mayor in name only. Like, they can't kick him out because there's no law to kick him out, because he hasn't technically been arrested for a crime or anything like that. So they've just like neutered him. And then in the meantime, a lot of people have been turning and looking at the province here and saying, well, can't the provincial government come in and boot him out? Because there, you know, you could make the argument that, you know, this maniac in charge of the economic engine of the province is probably a bad idea and probably a bad thing for the province as a whole, which is true. But then if the province goes and kicks out a democratically elected mayor, especially since like right now the leader of the province, the premier of Ontario, was not elected. Like, she – I don't know if this is the same in the States. You guys have some sort of I don't know how you guys actually allow people with, like, cast bones into a bowl or something. But for us, we like parties. We don't actually like people, except for on the mayoral level. So in Ontario, the Liberal Party is currently the ruling party. The person who was the premier at the time when that party was elected has since left office and has been replaced by another person. So basically our premier right now didn't really have the people elect her. So she's sort of like she hasn't been really voted in by the people. Her party was. So for her to go to Ford, who is a completely democratic by people elected mayor, and boot him out of office would sort of look bad from the whole democracy standpoint. So she was really looking for to not have to do that, because it would open a whole can of worms. So it looks like that's not going to happen unless this guy gets arrested for something, and he may very well still be arrested for something because there's all sorts of ongoing investigations going on. He's just going to kind of like bumble around and be like a big angry lout until like next October when there's an election in Toronto. But again, Toronto doesn't exist for the rest of us. There's just sort of like a big blind spot there and we're ignoring it.
Man, I love it. It's like ancient Rome when Caesar took control of the Senate. You know, he's like, just make me proconsulate just for a little while till the wars are over. And then he, you know, slowly made himself just a premier and an unchallenged leader of Rome. I love it. I love it. Anyways, Let's talk about punk rock, because...
Are you sure? I can talk more about Ontario politics. I'm sure that's what you want to hear.
I mean, honestly, Adam, I find the whole thing extremely fascinating, and I find... I mean, I'm not going to draw this out, but I do find Rob Ford's strategy fascinating, in that, like, because of the fundamental principles of both of our governments, it's like you really can't pin something on somebody unless you're absolutely sure they did it, you know? And so Rob Ford, and as many political people have done over the years, but Rob Ford is excellent at it. He keeps punching back and obscuring we all know that he did wacky stuff that he shouldn't be doing, you know? But he keeps, you know, fighting back and obscuring, so unless you can really drop the nickel on him, then you can't kick him out, you know. And also the political maneuver with the power shifting between, you know, the city government sapping him of his power. It's fascinating. I love it. It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it's, well, again, let's not talk too much about this on here because people will, you know, all 10 of our listeners will stop listening. So, anyways, punk rock. What?
So, Brittany, what did you think of referendum 117B4?
What?
You know, referendum 117B4. You know, it's supposed to modify. Civil Code 11263B?
I have no idea.
Oh, 11263B. That was the one where Noisy premiered the new song from the Lawrence Arms.
Right.
So the song. see that segue? That was great. Has the song's titled "You Are Here." It's going to be on the band's new album that's coming out on Epitaph on January 28th, called Metropole. Metropole? It's like not Metropole or something like that. I'm not like messing up my syllables. But anyways, it'll be the sixth studio album from the band. Their first on Epitaph Records. Their first since Oh Calcutta, which was in like the 1930s or something. So it's first in about 8 years, which is crazy. And so this song was released. Everyone has heard it about 900 times by the point that this podcast is coming out. Brittany, what do you think?
I think it's wonderful because Lawrence Arms have been like one of my favorite bands for a while. And when I first got into them, I was really into like Brandon songs. But then like as time went by, I got more into Chris songs. And lately, I'm not into Brandon songs. So it was really cool to hear a new Chris song. And I love it so much. And I really can't wait to hear the whole thing.
Adam, what'd you think?
You know what? I liked it. It didn't like super blow me away at the start, and I think that's because the Chris songs never really do, but I think that they're not those kind of songs. They're more sort of slow burn things. I think it was probably wise of them to lead with a Chris song, only because Brandon, just by his, you know, big loud Rob Fordian personality, sort of dominates the conversation when the Lawrence Arms aren't happening, just due to his blog, which is super popular, and you know, him being a big, big funny man on Twitter or whatever you want to call him. So he's more high profile. So it was nice to kind of hear this, you know, be the Lawrence Arms and not be like, here's more Brendan stuff, even though I love Brendan stuff. Don't get me wrong. It was a good foot forward for them, I think, since they've been away for so long.
Brittany, you said that you like Chris songs more than Brendan now. What is it about the Chris songs that you appreciate compared to the Brendan songs?
Well, when I still really like Brendan's songs. Lately, I've just been listening to Chris songs more. And I think, like, when I first started listening to them, I thought the Chris songs were really boring. And Brendan's songs seem more fun and more punk and just, you know, angrier and more fun. But now, actually, like, listening to Chris songs and listening to his lyrics and everything, and you just realize, wow, these songs are amazing. And that's why I like them a little more. And also, no, that's it.
Do you guys think this record is going to be like a huge record that changes people's lives, or will it just be another record that people like with regard to the Lawrence Arms but won't really change a whole lot of people's view of music or the band?
I've got to imagine that this is going to be like the new Hot Water Music record, where the band has been around for long enough that they've made their fans are devoted, you know. The people that have not yet heard them at this point, if they're in the right part of the punk scene, they're going to learn about them, you know, one way or another. But I don't even think with Epitaph's muscle behind it, whatever that's worth, there's some sort of threshold from the break into that they have not yet been able to reach. I mean, it's not like the Lawrence Arms have been obscure per se. I mean, like, you know, to people that are, you know, within the punk scene, it's pretty damn obvious that everyone loves the Lawrence Arms, at least within our corner of the punk scene. So, you know, I don't see, you know, Epitaph's power aside, where they're to be pushed outside of where they've gone. Like, it's the equivalent of, you know, of the new Hot Water Music record, maybe to a lesser degree of the new Against Me record. You know, it's gonna resonate with the people that it's supposed to resonate with, or that you'd expect it to resonate with, and it'll do incredibly well there. I have a hard time seeing where it goes other than that.
Well, fair enough. Where it goes, nobody knows. But speaking of where the vocal range of the lead singer of Polar Bear Club, unfortunately, his vocal range is going down. What happened was Polar Bear Club's Jimmy Stat, he has been asked to address the rather noticeable change in his vocals between their last record and this year's Death Chorus. He was pretty honest about the whole thing, and here's what he said. He said, "A couple months back before we recorded Death Chorus, I noticed my voice starting to change. It was cracking a lot on stage, which I'd never experienced before, and some of the higher notes in my range were starting to fade. So here we are in the studio, and my voice felt a little better compared to when I was on tour, but it had definitely changed. My range was a little lower, my voice was a little cleaner, singing, and I, like I used to sing, was simply not an ability. Oh, my range was a little lower, but my voice was a little cleaner, and singing like I used to sing was simply not an ability I possessed anymore. So we track the record the way it sounded best, and the result is what you'll hear. So I think it's interesting to see somebody be so frank about it. And honestly, the fact of the matter is people's voices do change, especially when you're singing the kind of band that Polar Bear Club is.
I think the easy thing to assume here would, and this is, I think, the gut reaction that a lot of the people in our comment section even had about this, was that it's a change to add to the, I don't know, commercial appeal of the band, which I think that in a certain place and time was totally an argument you could make. But these days, you know, people in the mainstream, would they give a shit regardless of how, you know, how clean or how, I don't know, how much maybe younger or whatever, however you'd want to put it, the singer sounds on this. I don't really know that there's necessarily a lot to be gained. I mean, the easy comparison, my favorite comparison in this sort of situation, everyone was making, say, the Jawbreaker comparison earlier, but my favorite one would be H2O. And if you guys remember, like, H2O was a sort of like a latter day, inspired by a lot of NYHC, but was really more of a 90s kind of skate punk band that was out of New York. Toby Morris, the front man, used to be a roadie for Sick of It All. They had a bunch of albums that were on Epitaph. And then in 2001, so this is right at kind of like the height of the Blink-182 era of things, H2O signed to, I think it was one of those labels, not around anymore, MCA Records. And they released an album called Go. And Morse sounded completely different on there. He did not sound like gruff, showy, you know, New York hardcore Toby Morse. He sounded like trying to get some of that sweet Blink-182 money Toby Morse. And the album bombed, and a lot of the, I remember the interviews at the time, a lot of the blame, I guess, for the change in vocal styling went not only to the production, but just to the fact that, you know, he sat down with a vocal coach and he was working with a vocal coach. So that was a lot of what created that, is that, like, it was a conscious effort on the part of him to, you know, to change his styling. Whether it was better or not is, I guess, up for debate. I mean, in the punk sense, probably not, but perhaps in the actual, you know, objective school of vocals sense, I don't even know what that means. Maybe it was better. There's probably more range in it, but yeah, that was seen as a lot worse. So I feel that, like, whenever a band does this, that's the feeling that people have, is like, oh, here we go. They're trying to get rich now. I think in this case, it might even be the opposite of that. And I guess what I mean by that is, this really brings into question, was the gruffness of early Polar Bear Club, was that more of an affectation that he was putting onto his vocals compared to maybe how they would naturally be if he wasn't trying to, you know, to sound like all these bands they were inspired from? I mean, you may never know, but that's my question here. It's like, maybe this is just the way this guy sounds when he's not trying to, like, kick the shit out of his voice.
Mm. Brittany, are you a fan of Polar Bear Club?
I think I like their first album. But I remember, okay, so I remember at Fest 10, which is actually where I met Adam. The first time I met Adam.
Adam! Sorry.
I was walking with some people, some of my friends, who are actually part of the Org Summit, and we ran into Jimmy, and we were like really excited, and we're like, Jimmy, go get pizza with us. And then he said no. And so then the whole summit has this whole vendetta against him for being a pizza hater. And I figure maybe him being such a pizza hater is probably why his vocals changed, because that's the only reason that makes sense to me.
Not enough pizza power.
Yeah.
Mm. That was way better than my long bullshit explanation. I don't know why you didn't just jump that in earlier.
Yeah, my guess would be that, you know, just after singing that way for so long without proper technique, he's just kind of damaged his voice. And that happens to a lot of musicians, you know. So, I mean, props to him for being so honest. Interesting, the last Polar Bear Record Club was recorded at Studio 4, which, and actually, we'll have a piece about that coming out eventually. Studio 4 is a very, very famous recording studio outside of Philadelphia, not in Downingtown, near Downingtown. And it's where they recorded like a bunch of Billy Joel hits, a bunch of Elton John hits, Crisscross. It's where they recorded Les Is Jackson. They recorded, who else did they record there? Sting. And so it's cool to go in there and see all these like classic platinum records by these classic artists. And the guy that built Studio 4 is a guy called Phil Niccolo, who's an extremely, extremely famous record producer. And a younger guy called Will Yip is kind of taking it over from Phil as Phil gradually goes into retirement. Yip,
like, he worked with None More Black.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And so plus 5 punks points for you. So I just think it's cool that this studio is continuing on. It'll be, but it's extremely interesting that it's going from, you know, the biggest artists in the world to relatively small bands like, you know, Polar Bear Club.
I gotta say, the last time I saw Polar Bear Club live was December of last year in St. Catharines with the Flatliners, the Menzingers, and the Snips. Which was a great lineup. And I'd never seen them. I don't think I'd ever seen them live before that, perhaps at Fest once. But, man, he is an entertaining... Like, I didn't really know any of their stuff, but he was a super entertaining vocalist to me. He was sort of, like, all over the place and, like big personality that he was putting across as he was playing, which was honestly, it was kind of Descendancy to me. It was in the same vein you see it with a lot of, say, like a lot of modern hardcore bands. Like you see like Pain of Black or something like that, where Dan's on stage and he's just, you know, he has this madness about him in his eyes and in his face as he's doing his thing. And he had that going on during the show, which, even though I didn't really know their stuff, made it super interesting. Now, the more kind of shouty stuff that they were doing, the more gruff stuff fit that sort of stage presence. So this stuff here that's actually more melodic, you know, a bit gentler, I'm curious to see how that will actually translate to the band's live show. Because if you got to figure, if fans are sort of on the fence about how this record sounds, you got to imagine that a lot of them are going to be making up their mind when they actually see the band live the next time and go, you know, is this still the band I fell in love with, or is this something different now? So I'm curious to see how that comes across.
But people's vocals like change all the time. Like you can even look at Against Me, like her voice hasn't gotten worse. It's gotten a lot better, but you know, she definitely isn't like as rough and she doesn't scream as much as she used to. And it's a lot more clean now.
Yeah, but then you figure once you stop doing that, people slashed their tires and went ballistic.
Probably. So. I live in like a bubble where I just picture them as the most perfect band ever. So
you know whose voice has never changed? Keith Morris's voice still sounds exactly like it did on Nervous Breakdown.
That is so true.
And it's awesome. And you know who else's voice never changed? Roy Orbison. I was just watching one of Roy Orbison's final performance, and man, he sounded exactly like he did in like 1962.
John. What's the one that? You watched, is it the one with like where Bruce Springsteen and Keith Richards were there?
It was not, but I was reading about that.
Oh, that one's so cool.
But I'll tell you, what a true performer, Roy Orbison. What a true performer, Polar Bear Club. What a true performer, Large Jane Grace. And I'll tell you who else has a lot to do with melody, Masked Intruder. They've got a new 7-inch, quote, EP coming out called Under the Mistletoe. We got to give this one to Brittany. So, Brittany, I have two questions for you.
Okay.
Three questions for you. Are you excited for this? Will it be good? And also, does two songs an EP make?
All right, I'm excited for it. Will it be good? I'm not totally sure, because usually punk bands covering Christmas songs doesn't turn out that well. Usually any rock musician covering a Christmas song does not turn out that well. Except I really like Beach Boys Christmas songs. But two songs, I guess. I mean, I guess it's an EP. I always thought like an EP was like 7 songs or less. I thought that's what constituted an EP, unless it was just one song and it was a single.
You guys all know what EP and LP stands for, right?
Extended play and long play?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Did you need to ask that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, honestly, kids these days with the iTunes, they might not even know what it means, you know?
Extreme play.
Extreme yeah. play.
I'm going to tell people that's what it means now. But yeah, this probably isn't going to be – it's probably going to be fun, but it's probably not going to be great. It's definitely something that fans are going to have just for their, like, collection. It's definitely not just going to be, like, something people shout out at shows. Be like, please play your cover at Silent Night.
Yeah, Christmas stuff is always tough in that respect. I almost wonder why it's worth the studio effort to actually, you know, record those things. I mean, well, I had the same thing about like the Bad Religion Christmas thing that I was asking. We're like, who? I mean, hell, I don't even want to hear Christmas songs on Christmas usually. So I don't know why bands would want to go through the effort of actually recording some of this stuff. But I don't know,
Brittany. What is your Christmas music time frame?
Wait, what?
Like, when can you start listening to Christmas music, and when do you have to stop?
Unfortunately, at my job, I don't really have a choice about when
I mean, on your own time, on your own time.
On my own time. You know what? I don't really listen to Christmas music that much on my own time. But like I said, I will totally listen to some Beach Boys Christmas music.
Adam, how about you? What's your time frame? Is it like three
songs? So our time frame is that, and this has been the same for the past few years, avoid it like the plague. And then usually as we're driving around from family's house to family's house on Christmas Day, I'm trying to play Fairy Tale of New York in the car as much as I can over and over. And that's it.
Well, see, I like Christmas music in general. I'll start about a week before Christmas, but I can't listen to Christmas music like a second after Christmas is over. It makes me sad because Christmas is over. But during Christmas, I love to listen to Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney and also Christmas Rapping by The Waitresses. I love that song. And
you guys honestly, I mean, I find any sort of jingle bell as an instrument in a song, even if it's not a Christmas song, incredibly weird if it's not at Christmas at the time. Or even like a song that's like some band's Christmas sort of themed song. Like there was a, oh God, I'm trying to think here. There was a song on the, I'm trying to think, it was either Mighty Mighty Boston's or the Dropkick Murphys or something like that. One of their recent things that was like sort of a song about the holidays, but it was an original. It wasn't a traditional Christmas song, but there might've been some jingle bells in like the background of one of the tracks. And every time it's on, I was just like, I can't listen to this. It's not the right time to listen to something like this. It's wrong.
Well, not to drag this out, but I'm excited for Christmas this year because I guess back in like March, I got Rob Halford of Judas Priest Christmas album. And I haven't listened to it, but I'm totally going to listen to his heavy metal Christmas album.
Well, that might be cool.
So anyway, speaking of cool stuff, Adam, do you have a cool jam to pull out of your Christmas stocking?
Oh, God. All right. All right. Okay. Let's do this here. So we haven't reported on some punk news yet because we don't actually do our job very well. But against me, against me, Jesus Christ, wrong.
A band with an exclamation point.
Bomb the music industry. Wow. That was weird. has announced their final show. They're going to play their final show, they say, at the Warsaw in Brooklyn on January 19th of 2014. The show will cost you 15 bones at the door, which they're actually apologizing for because it's higher than their standard 10.
$15.
God bless this band. So anyways, though, they're playing their final show, so I kind of felt like it'd be appropriate for us to spin a bomb music industry song. What bomb song do you guys want to play? We have a whole selection because they're not really that choosy about preventing us from playing songs. So anything you guys want to play? I mean, I'm partial to you know the stuff on Vacation myself, but we can do whatever you want to do.
Oh, I like Adults. Chicago Punk Rock Show.
Oh, you know, actually, no, yeah, I like...
You mean the first time I met San Juan?
Well, yeah, I was thinking the chorus because I love the chorus. I also like Can I Pay My Rent in Fun?
I think we should play because, like, the way they're promoting this is they're saying Nothing's Forever, Dude. So we should... I think we should play the song that line is from. And that's on Vacation. And that's, like, what is it, the third, fourth track?
Well, I say give it a spin.
All right, let's play whichever Bomb the Music Industry song that happens to be. Here we go.
Such a skeptic when they flail their arms, screaming, oh good God, again. All the records we love have dirty covers, dusty bruises, deep scratches, oh. Gotta block it out when all the lights go bright till the room gets dark again. Cause we put up our guard for supersize in their sharp moonlit big fashion. Cause I got a new
And we are back, and I hope you figured out what song that was. Adam, you want to get us started with some less fun news? Because I got to say, that Bond Music Industry track, people, was that a fun jam, or was that a fun jam?
Amazing. So,
this is much less fun news.
Chicago Punk Rock Show.
Okay, so now I guess the good news is that so this is an update on the situation with Pussy Riot in Russia. If you remember some past weeks of news, they had lost Nadzia Tanakovia. I'm probably totally pronouncing her name wrong again.
Chris Barrett explained it to us. Nadezhda.
Okay, I will not remember that in 5 minutes. Anyways, they lost her. Which is kind of scary because she was in prison in a work camp. So it seems they found her. So a new update on the whereabouts and condition of this member of Pussy Riot has come to light. So she's currently at the, and this sounds horrifying, tuberculosis hospital number 1 in Krasnoyarsk, I guess, in Western Siberia, undergoing tests for quote unquote various conditions. Although her husband notes to BBC that she doesn't actually have tuberculosis. So he told the BBC that he had spoken with his wife for the first time since she initially went missing on October 21st. Now, he said that his wife told him that the conditions at the hospital were much better than in the penal colony that she was at, and that she had not been beaten during the 26 days that she was missing. Russian prison authorities issued a statement confirming that she had arrived at the institution of the Russian prison service in the Krasnoyarsk, I can't pronounce it, region. So they have found her. She's in a hospital. That's, I guess, better than her being mysteriously missing. But that's what we know right now. So her and a fellow Pussy Riot member, Maria Alkohina, are due to be released from prison on March 2014 after serving a 2-year prison sentence for hooliganism motivated by religious hatred, which was for the you want to call it punk rock art performance that they put on in a Russian Orthodox church a few years ago that kind of brought them to international attention. So this is where the story is right now, is that she's been found. She's not missing anymore. She's in this totally scary sounding tuberculosis hospital, and that's where it is. I don't really know what commentary we need on that aside from Adam pretending to pronounce Russian words.
It sounded to me like you were doing Klingon, you know?
Yeah, I was gonna say. There's a lot of Y's and K's in this word. I'm just gonna make a noise and then.
Well, I said it before and I'll say it again. I hope this young lady gets out of this okay. And honestly, I wonder if like press has really saved this young lady's life. Like, I wonder if all the attention that like the BBC, that Huffington Post has put on her, maybe she might have just disappeared, you know, if it wasn't for all this international attention.
I'd like to think that given the spotlight that's on Russia with the Olympics and stuff like that, it would be pretty bad form for them to like legitimately disappear someone who's a slightly high profile.
No, but I'm saying, like, if people didn't pay attention to this, she wouldn't be high profile, so maybe she would just disappear.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, good then. Excellent.
All right.
I'm glad we agree.
For now.
Speaking of something that everybody can agree on, Andrew WK is going on a winter Christmas tour. It's solo. No one's sure if it's him in a band or him in like a backing sound system like he uses sometimes, but it's not a DJ set. He's going to be performing I Get Wet in its entirety. I'm definitely going to go in Westchester because it's like 5 minutes from my house. With me and Joe Pallone just saw him do the Ramone set with Marky Ramone. It was awesome. I gotta say, I wasn't a huge Andrew WK fan to begin with, but I mean, the guy has just been winning me over consistently for like the past 4 years. Everything he does, I think, is just creative, interesting, and awesome. I'm super psyched. I'm going to go see him. I recommend that any of you that like to have a good time at a blasted out, adrenaline-pumping rock show, go see Andrew WK. Because actually, and I don't want to drag this out either, but my favorite bands are bands that when they go on tour, each tour is something unique. Like Frank Zappa, every time his tour is completely unique, and you're not going to get that to see that again. It seems to me that with Andrew WK, a lot of the stuff he does is like, okay, this time I'm going to do this because it's interesting. Probably not going to do it next time. So that's why I have continually followed Andrew WK for like the past 2 years, because if you ask me, he just keeps doing interesting things.
I'm trying to figure out when I last saw Mr. WK, and I just looked it up and I found it. You know, I love when I Google things and the answer to my question is an old punk news article posted by Scott on January 28th, 2004 at 2:22 a.m. So the show that I saw him at was on it was in 2004 on February 17th at Club Denim, which is not called that anymore, in Guelph, Ontario. So it's been like 10 years since I've seen him. That show was amazing. It was super fun.
You should go, Adam.
I should. Where's the closest one of these to me?
Oh, nowhere.
There you go.
The one closest to me is like literally 10 minutes from my house, and I'm super excited to go.
Well, that's because you live right in the middle of the sprawl, so you.
I do.
That happens. But, you know, when there's some sort of like plague, you'll be first to go.
True. Brittany, you're out in the middle of nowhere, so you don't have to worry about plagues at all. Had you the chance, would you go? Or are you anti-Andrew WK because you feel he's more gimmicky than he is substance? Where do you stand on the Andrew WK ballot?
I would probably go. He's a lot of fun. Like, when I saw Andrew WK, I've only seen him once. And he had us do a square pit instead of a circle pit. And I'm not entirely sure if it worked, but it was a lot of fun.
Do you think Andrew WK would be a cool guy just to hang out with? Bro on bro.
Well, he likes to party, so yeah.
Honestly, I think that's overstated. I don't think he actually parties that much outside of his stage performance.
Well, he has a good Twitter.
He does. Actually, here we go. The two thoughts that just popped into my head about this. One, at that show back in 2004 that I saw him at, he played several songs with some girl on his shoulders. And he just like went and picked someone up from the crowd and like, you know, put her on his shoulders. And then just played several songs with her there hanging on for dear life, which was funny. Second, if you guys have not seen, and maybe this is something we can actually play as a song. Ha! I got something we can play as a song.
Ha!
If you guys have not heard the Evaporators album, Busy Doing Nothing, which was from Canadian Treasure, and you know, really the pre-Rob Ford of our culture, Nardwar the Human Serviette, he released an album that he collaborated with Andrew WK on, and a bunch of other artists. I think Kate Bush was on there. Anyways, called Busy Doing Nothing, that came out last year, I think. And there are a bunch of songs in which Andrew and Nardwar are, you know, vocally and musically partying together. So let's play something from that, because that would be cool. Hold on. I'm going to actually pull out the record so I can figure out what to tell you we're playing from that. So
well,
you guys.
Wow. We'll keep talking. Did you guys know that there's a Andrew WK Nardwar, the Human Serviette split 7-inch with the cover by Mitch Clem? It's a cool 7-inch.
Sure do know that. Do you also know that? Also, and his what's her name, Amanda, are like doing this thing where you just email Mitch and he will draw you for $10, and he will draw you and another person for $20, and for an extra $10, no matter how many people are in it, Amanda will watercolor it. You know that?
I did know that. Are you doing that?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally doing that.
Well, that's great. Did you know that Andrew WK once put out a square 7-inch, and it's really cool, and it has him doing like a Queen-type song, but it's not a Queen song, or it's called I'm a Vagabond, and it's awesome?
Does it look weird when it's playing?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it's a square.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine what that looks like, though, because, like, records are a circle.
Brittany Strummer is Mitch Clem underrated?
Oh, no.
He's not underrated, so he's overrated.
No.
He's rated right.
He is rated.
All right, stop
I really do think Mitch Clem is underrated, and I think more people should buy his art because he's really awesome, and he works really hard at what he does.
You know, he hates you, you know? Like, he talks shit about you all the time.
Oh, man, that sucks. Because, like, I really love that guy.
Like, did you see that? He's like, 25 Reasons I Hate Brittany Strummer.
Oh man, that bums me out. I'm gonna like take down all my Mitch Clem art in my house now.
He said that was his purpose for doing it.
Well, that's really, it's really weird.
Yeah, well, you know, who am I to judge?
All right, here we go. I got it. I got to figure it out. First of all, if you guys do not have the Busy Doing Nothing LP, at least my version of it came with a bunch of extra Nardwuar crap that he had put together. One of them being a calendar. That's a 2013 calendar, so it's probably not a lot of use to you people. But it has a lot of really cool photos by photographer Bev Davies of bands like The Adolescents and Iggy Pop and Pill and The Slits and James Brown and all kinds of cool stuff in there. So, yeah, you want to check that out because it's awesome. Anyway, this is Andrew WK and The Evaporators and the song I Hate Being Late When I'm Early.
Back on the Pug News podcast. Do you guys want to wrap up these last two stories?
Sure.
Adam, are you down like a clown?
Do I have a choice?
I think Adam needs to do the next Ska Go Solo Tour because he's Adam and he likes Ska a lot.
Let's hear it.
I gotta be 2001 Adam to make this really super exciting for everyone.
Put on your poor.
All right. Yeah. Where is my hat? I have a hat. I'm not wearing it.
Pick it up, Adam. Pick it up.
I will try. Okay, so there is a Ska Go Solo tour that is coming out. It features, people that I will tell you once I get the story up in front of me. One of them is from Less Than Jake. His name is Chris. One of them is from Catch 22. His name is, I will tell you as soon as I load the frickin' story.
Could it be Ryan?
It might be Ryan. Internet is hard, people. Let's get this going. Here we go. Okay. Wow. Sorry. I was too busy playing with my Nardwuar calendar. Chris DeMakes from Less Than Jake, JT from the Arrogant Sons of Bitches, and Ryan Eldred of Catch 22 are hitting the road together for the Ska Go Solo Tour. The guys are going to play a bunch of solo sets and then unite to play a few songs together. You want to think this is sort of a revival tourish sort of thing. The tour will also feature a split 7-inch to be released via Asbestos Records. And you can find all the dates on Punk News. This thing kicks off on January 2nd at the Revolution Music Hall in Amityville, New York, and goes through a whole bunch of cities, hitting places where you folks probably love, live, or go, like Brooklyn, New York, Asbury Park, Richmond, Virginia, Gainesville, and a whole bunch of other places, wrapping up in Orlando, Florida on January 16th. So you can find all those dates on on Pub News right now. So that this is happening. None of you will be able to answer this probably because you aren't ska people, but A, it still feels weird to hear any of one from less than Jake's full names to me. Because when I was, you know, back in the 90s, like, those guys didn't have last names. Like, Chris was Chris. Like, he was Chris from Less Than Jake, and that was it, and that was all he was ever billed as. So to hear anything as his last name, I always still think it's sort of made up. It's like, that can't be his last name. He can't want that revealed. I can't believe we posted his last name in a story. But I guess they're okay with that now. Also, it seems odd to me, for some reason, whenever I see Less Than Jake on one of these ska groupings, and I know that they were a big, you know, part of the third wave ska movement and stuff like that, and a lot of people think of them as a ska band, but it doesn't feel so much like back in the day when there were a million third wave ska bands floating around that they were, I don't know, that they counted themselves as one of those number. Like, they always seemed to try to play with punk bands and on punk tours and stuff like that, and that they were closer to, I want to say, like, spiritually a little bit closer to, say, what Rancid was doing when they were playing a lot of ska, like, that they were still more in the punk realm of it, and they're not like, hey, we're another one of these third wave bands. But, you know, it's, I don't know, for some reason that seems weird to me. I'm not sure why. But, again, I'm just talking to myself. Any thoughts on ska?
Yes.
I would totally go to this. I'm sorry.
You go. Go ahead.
Okay. I would totally go to this, but I'm not into Less Than Jake, so that'd be like the part that I like wouldn't be into. But I would totally go because I would want to see Catch 22 songs be played, because when I saw I saw Streetlight on their like recent tour they're doing, which is their last tour, and they didn't play any Catch 22 songs, and I've seen them before and I thought they would play Catch 22 songs, it being like, you know, their last tour, but so they didn't at all.
Are you able to tell like, is this guy from the Catch 22 era that everyone loved, or is he from the Catch 22 era that was like the latter day after they split off into Streetlight?
Oh man, you know what, I have no idea.
Because I don't know, because like there's some sort of... Go,
even though it's not even coming here.
Yeah, because there was... I mean, again, I really don't know anything about Catch-22, except that, you know, there was that whole, like, Streetlight Manifesto split, so I got to imagine that people that are really into that band have certain opinions about this.
Probably. You know, I'm not that far into it. I enjoy them on the surface, so I wouldn't know. But I would be way more actually into the Arrogant Sons of Bitches guy, JT, because I really like Arrogant Sons of Bitches. And it's really funny because, like, I don't know if you've ever been a Bomb in the Music Industry show. And I swear it happens at every show. And someone's just like, yells ASAP. And then Jeff yells at them and says, you're at the wrong show. And he gets all angry. And so I think it'd be cool to see some Arrogant Sons of Bitches songs, even though they wouldn't beat Jeff.
Ryan Eldred is one of the classic Catch 22ers. He was on Keys Being Nights, which I know a lot of ska kids are really into. I'm a huge Bond the Music Industry fan, huge fan. But I don't know much about Arrogant Sons of Bitches, and it isn't for lack of trying. It's just their CDs are like really rare, and they're always like 80 or 90 bucks on eBay, so I'm not going to drop that on a CD. But I'm going to go to this in Westchester just to check it out, man, and see... What I can see about Arrogant Sons of Bitches. Did Jeff sing on Arrogant Sons of Bitches?
You know, maybe.
Did JT sing on Arrogant Sons of Bitches?
I know Jeff was like, he was like obviously the singer. I don't know about this JT guy. I really don't even know who he is.
Like who's the main Arrogant Son of a Bitch?
I think it's Jeff.
Let's see. Actually, we know a lot about this stuff. Oh, you can get stuff, Arrogant Sons of Bitches.
You don't have to pay, like, what you said, all that money, whatever. You can go on quote-unquote. There's Arrogant Sons of Bitches on quote-unquote.
Yeah, I hate MP3s. I hate them.
Then why do you love Bomb the Music Industry?
Because I buy their records and CDs. And honestly, I know Jeff Rosenstock is often like, oh, I'm not a good singer, you know. But honestly, Bomb the Music Industry is one of the best, if not the best. Well, I can't say the best, but one of the top 1% of 1%. Of modern punk rock bands live. They are awesome live. I've seen them 6 times now.
They're amazing.
I keep calling them like the E Street Band of punk rock. And I think it fits just because they have so much energy. They're so wild. And they're a little sloppy live, which makes it that much better and more fun.
Yeah.
And plus, like, their set lists every night are completely different, which is crazy. So I'm a huge fan. I'm definitely going to – well, I'm not definitely
– especially when Jeff breaks his wrist and they can't play all the songs they want to. Did you see that tour? I saw that tour.
No. Oh, no, but check this out. I saw Jeff Rosenstock's solo show this summer. Amazing.
I saw his solo show, too. It was so good.
Isn't he really an amazing live performer?
Yeah, like, the last song, he just, like, kind of just, like, was, like, see? Then he, like, freaked out, threw the mic on the ground, and ran to the drums and started playing on the drums. And I'm like, this is awesome.
I mean, he is truly a phenomenal live performer, isn't he?
He really is.
And that's what I'm talking about is, what I like about Jeff Rosenstock is that I don't think he necessarily adheres to the cool punk rock guy thing. You know, like, he gets down on stage, and that's what I love about rock, is he really gets down.
I have a cool fact about Bomb the Music Industry.
What is it? Let's hear it.
Their bassist, his name is John. He has a cat named Monster, and she is engaged to my cat, Professor.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That is cool. I've got a fun fact. Is Arrogant Sons of Bitches, Jeff Rosenstock was the lead singer, but JT played the keyboards, and he also did vocals. But I did not know this is... Bomb the Music Industry basically is Arrogant Sons of Bitches. Mike Costa, John DeDominici, and Jeff Rosenstock were all in that band, and that's basically Bomb the Music Industry.
Yeah, but they sound so much different.
Yeah, I guess I do. I haven't really listened to them that much, but.
And if we were to, like, compare, like, there's, like, a handful of Arrogant Sons of Bitches songs I like, but I love, like, an entire Bomb the Music Industry discography. Like, Bomb is a lot better than ASAB.
Well, fair enough. Excellent. Should we close out this podcast with one more wonderful story?
D4. Yes.
We will close this out, and I'll just let you two go nuts over this. The first few acts of Poozafest 2014 have been announced. Two Poozafests ago was awesome. I wasn't so hot on the last one, but this one might be pretty hot. Here's who's at two Poozafests 2014 so far. More acts will be announced. There is Mad Caddies, Reagan Youth, the Turbo ACs, Restorations, the Holy Mess, the Creeps, Placeholder, Joel Tannenbaum, Mountain Man, Hidden Cabins, Address, Mike Mowak, La Carell, Amanda X, In Belief, Set It Back, No Scientists, No Guts, No Glory, Wasteland Potential, New Elders, and Bit 2.
You didn't even mention D4.
Oh, and Dillinger 4. They're playing
there, yeah, too. Oh, yeah. Them, too. Yeah. So... It turns out that I think we are doing – we sponsored Poozafest for the past couple of years. I think we're going to do it again this year, so we're going to be pretty involved with this one coming up. So, you know, Poozafest goes down May 16th, 17th, 18th in downtown Montreal, Quebec, which is awesome. I didn't get to go last year because I sort of had a baby at that time, but I went the year before, and it was pretty amazing. And there was a lot of cool stuff that goes on. Pooza is always great for sort of like a mix of, you know, bands that I think you would more traditionally consider, you know, punk newsy bands, bands that would play fests and stuff like that. And all kinds of crazy local Canadian and Quebecois stuff that is going on. So, yeah, this is really cool. Restorations up in Canada again is awesome. Dillinger 4, you know. Well, Dillinger 4 never plays anywhere, so them playing anywhere is exciting. So them playing in Quebec is super exciting. So, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is one of these big sort of multi-venue and, you know, festivals. So there's probably a lot to come in terms of announcements. It's pretty exciting.
I think since you said we'll be a sponsor of this, we should make shirts for Poozafest, and they need to say, why not Quebec?
Mm. Do you want to know the real reason?
I mean, I just think it's funny that it always says that. So I think we should say that. Because literally every time I used to post a comment,
that's people hilarious.
Always, why not Quebec? And I'm like, well, we need shirts that say that because it's in Montreal, Quebec.
Oh, we do need shirts that say that. So yeah, if anyone's ever entered a contest on Punk News, none of our contests are open to anyone that is in Quebec because there is... For reasons I will not get into, an incredibly weird and archaic and specific law within Quebec that you can't actually run a contest there without jumping through a bunch of bizarre hoops and red tape and costly bullshit that we can't really jump through if we're trying to, like, give away a 7-inch. So, poor people in Quebec never managed to win our contest. But it's interesting because I gave away Pooza tickets last year, and I feel like I skipped the why not Quebec rule because it seems sort of counterintuitive. And now I actually want to look up that contest and see if I did that. It might get me in trouble with the Thought Police in Quebec, though.
Like, as soon as we post this podcast, like 12 minutes later, Adam White gets arrested by the Quebec police.
Oh, I'm going to end up with just like in a French prison somewhere. Let's see. Pooza. What schedule? Oh, man. Yeah, why not?
Is it pronounced Quebec and not Quebec?
It's
Quebec.
Quebec.
It's Quebec. It's Quebec. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll never forget when I was talking to some guy from Quebec. I didn't want to insult him, so I said, "Well, how do you pronounce your name?" And he's like, "I don't know how to pronounce it in English." And I was like, "Well, how do you pronounce it?" You know? And he's like, "Well, people in English couldn't say it." I'm like, "How do you pronounce it?" And he was like, "Henri." I'm like, "Oh, Henry, Henri." That was my one of two interactions with French culture. My other interaction
I'm married into a French Canadian family, and every time I even pretend to speak French, which I totally cannot do, it sounds horrible, and my wife gets mad at me for insulting, her whole culture.
Does your father-in-law wear like a striped shirt, a beret, a red handkerchief, and ride a bicycle with a basket in the front, and it's got a baguette like on the front?
I didn't say it was Parisian. Difference.
Or Adam, you marry my daughter. Oui, oui. Is that racist? I hope that's not racist.
If you have to ask. So, anyways, Pooza's coming up. We'll probably end up talking to Hugo there about what's going on and what's coming up, and we'll have lots of announcements to come.
Isn't it Hugo?
Yeah, it is. Honestly, I lied. It wasn't Henri. It was Hugo. And I was interviewing him. I was like, "So how do I pronounce your name?" He's like, "I do not know how to say it in English." I'm like, "Well, how do you say it?" He's like, "You could not say it." I'm like, "Well, what's your name?" He's like, "Hugo." I'm like, "Oh, Hugo." No? And then I was like, "Oh, that sounds like a Renaissance painter or a dictator."
You just have to say that, "Oh, well, I can pronounce the H, so that's cool. I'll just call you Hugo."
Hugo.
Yeah, I've learned that it's best not to pretend that you can affect the accent because it's
honestly, like I would say, I've been in other countries, and if somebody pronounced my name wrong, I wouldn't be like, "You're an ass. Oh, you pronounced my name wrong." I would just, I'd be like, "That's cool, man. I mean, you don't speak English. I don't really speak your language. It doesn't hurt my feelings that you pronounce my name wrong. You don't mean disrespect from it, you know."
There is a certain historical chip that rests on the proud Quebecois shoulder that is way more complicated than we can discuss here.
Let me put it this way.
Probably the reason.
I just want to say people in America even pronounce John's name wrong. They say Gentile.
Oh, I was putting my first name. It's a very long story about my last name, so I won't get into it here.
I remember it is because of that Big Bopper song, like Chantilly Lace. That's how I remember your last name is pronounced Gentilly.
You know, that's my go-to karaoke song. That and the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Give It Away Now. Those are my two go-to karaoke songs.
Mine is Summer Nights, but I have to have someone, obviously.
Adam. Oh, Summer from Greece, right?
Yeah.
Adam, let's wrap up this podcast. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, God. I don't think I have one. I don't know what I would do.
You got to have a karaoke song.
No, I don't think I do. I didn't think about this.
Do you like doing T-Swift?
You know what's good is Oh, What a Night by the Four Seasons. I love that song.
Oh, I'm actually just thinking about it right now. I have no idea. I don't know. What, Four Seasons, that's yours?
Mine is Give It Away Now by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which always brings down the house, because if you really go for it, people go crazy. My other one is Chantilly Lace. A wiggle and a walk and a wiggle and a talk. Oh, baby, that's a what I like.
I honestly don't have an answer to this question. Brittany?
Well, I'm just going to take Adam karaokeing.
Well, fair enough. Adam, next time we see you, we will take you karaokeing. This week, Adam, I want you to think about what your karaoke song would be. And I will.
I'll have an answer by next week.
Well, we will follow up. Until then, Punk News listeners. Oh, we got to thank Sound Guy Nairman. This podcast would not happen without the man in charge, the man who is large, the man who rocks and never stops, the man who does not wear a watch but carries a Glock. He doesn't. The main man, Sound Guy Nairman. Can we just have a round of applause for Sound Guy Nairman? And thanks again for listening, Punk News listeners. As always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of the people expressing them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions of punknews.org or anybody named Ugo or Henri or Adam White's father-in-law, who's probably on a bicycle right now with the baguette in the front. You know, maybe he's got brie and a picnic basket. That's cool. I can appreciate that lifestyle. Anyway, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. And until then, we will see you next week.